走。
呀呀呀 super 啊、wie machen wir mit how do we do with the verse? Should I just sing alone?、Huh? We have like short lecture, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Tata sadaya batram te atmanam suprajam niripa istaste putra kamalasya putram dasyati yagyabuk. Tata. Therefore. Sadaya. Execute the sacrifice to get.
To get,
executing sacrifice to get something. Badram,
good fortune.
Te,
to you.
Atmanam,
your own.
Suprajam,
a good son.
Nripa,
O king.
Ista,
being worshipped.
Te,
by you.
Putra kamasya,
desiring
to have a son.
Putram,
a son.
Dasyati,
he will deliver.
He will deliver.
Yagyabuk,
the Lord,
the enjoyer of the sacrifice.
Translation.
O King, we wish all good fortune to you.
You have no son,
but if you pray at once to the Supreme Lord and ask for a son,
and if you execute the sacrifice for that purpose,
the enjoyer of the sacrifice, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will fulfill your desire.
Wie ist dein Englisch?
Ja, das geht. Du verstehst.
Okay.
So we don't have a purport in this verse. I will read the next verse. Did everyone understood what was this verse saying? Was hat der... Sorry, I have to speak in English. What did the verse said? What was the meaning of the verse?Don't look. what did I read? What was the verse saying?
Wer spricht Englisch?
Das Kind kann pray the Lord to get the son and the sages that blessed him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, more or less, huh? The priests are telling now the King Angar that if you want to have a son,You can pray to the Lord for a son. And if you perform the yagya properly, you will get your son. So the priest are saying to the king, you pray for the son, you do the yagya, and you will get your son. That's mainly the meaning of that verse. So next verse, be very attentive. I will ask you what was saying the next verse.
Tatasva bhagadeyani grahishyanti divokasa yatyagya purusha shakshad apataya harir varata.
When Hari, the supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices, is invited to fulfill your desire for a son, all the demigods will come with him and take their share.In the sacrifice. Purport. Whenever a sacrifice is performed, it is meant for satisfying Lord Vishnu, the enjoyer of the fruits of all sacrifice. And when Lord Vishnu agrees to come to a sacrificial arena, all the demigods naturally follow their master, and their shares
are offered in such sacrifice. The conclusion is that the sacrifice performed are meant for Lord Vishnu, not for the demigod. Here we hear that when Lord Vishnu will be called like this in the sacrifice, he will come and all the demigods will follow him. And they will come to also get a little maha from the sacrifice. But Prabhupada mentioned we should know that Vishnu is the supreme enjoyer of the sacrifice. The demigod, they just take the remnants, their parts. I read one more verse and then I will try to give a little elaboration.
Tamstan kamam hari dadyat yanyan kamayate jana aradito jate vesa tata pumsam falodaya.
The performer of the sacrifice under karmakanda activities achieve the fulfillment of the desire for which he worshipped the Lord. The one who performed the sacrifice, even with the karmakanda activity, he will achieve the result. His desire will be fulfilled. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord says that he awards benediction to the worshipper according to his desire. The Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all living entities conditioned within this material world full freedom to act in their own way. The Supreme Personality of Godhead gives to every living entity the freedom to act according their own way. But to his devotee, he said that instead of working in that way, it is better to surrender unto him, for he will take charge of the devotee. Here we have the difference. The normal people, they are praying to the Lord to get some specific desire, but the devotee actually just surrender unto the Lord, and the Lord take care of him. So there is quite a difference between the two persons. That is the difference between a devotee and a fruitive actor. The fruitive actor enjoys only the fruit of his own activities, but the devotee, being under the guidance of the Supreme Lord, simply advanced in devotional service to achieve the ultimate goal of life, to go back home, back to Godhead. The significant word in this verse is kamam, which means sense gratificatory desires. A devotee is devoid of kamam. He is anyabilasita sunyam. A devotee is always devoid of all desires for sense gratification. His only aim is to satisfy or gratify the senses of the Lord. That is the difference between a karmi and a devotee. Srila Prabhupada has such a good manner, such a good way to always give us what is a devotee. He always gives us the example, what is actually a devotee, so that when we read that, we feel, oh, I want to become a devotee. That's how I should be. So Prabhupada speaks here of the devotee is anyabilasita sunyam. He wants actually only to satisfy the desire of the Lord, the senses of the Lord.
Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Namo Vishnu padaya Krishna prestaya bhutale shimate bhaktivedanta swami niti namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunyavari Pashkatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaurabhaktavinda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So the verse from today, they are giving us a little bit different levels of approaching the Lord. We have the first level, which is mentioned when the sages are telling King Anga, you can just pray for your son, meaning you can pray for some of your material desires to be fulfilled by the Lord. And if you do like this, the Lord will fulfill your material desire. And then we have another level, when the devotee will pray to the Lord also to have something back, but not directly material desires, but when the devotee will ask the Lord to help him in his own spiritual life. That means the request of the devotee is actually for the progress, for his own progress towards Krishna. And we have the third level, the highest level, which is when the devotee is just serving the Lord without asking anything in exchange. He don't have any desire. He just want to give pleasure to Krishna. So I would like to speak a little bit of these two, three graduation today. So if we see this verse with King Anga, he's actually asking the Lord for material benefit. And because we are devotee, we may sometimes think, oh, that's Maya. Asking the Lord for a son, who can do that? We are devotees, we don't ask for material desires. But actually, we can see that it's already quite a good step in the life of the living entity, that although there are material desires in the heart, but the living entity is already going and turning toward the Lord. He's not just trying to fulfill this desire by his own, but he's going to the Lord at least to ask. And then the Lord will purify him. And then he will be able to progress. So that's already something nice. Although we know that that's not what we want to achieve, but we should already appreciate those who turn toward the Lord, even if they have material desires. When you read Srimad Bhagavatam, there are some chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam when there are also material desires that are granted. Like, I don't know exactly, but there are some chapters when you come at the end of the chapter, it is said, if you read again and again this chapter, you will get wealth, or you will get power, things like this. And one may ask, but it's Srimad Bhagavatam. How is it, why is it written like this? And once I asked my spiritual master, how is it that sometimes even in Srimad Bhagavatam we have those material desires that are granted just by reading Srimad Bhagavatam? And my Guru Maharaj said, actually by doing that, the person will become purified. And just by becoming purified, his desire will change. And then he will be gradually attracted to Krishna. So it's alright. We have the example of Dhruva Maharaj, who was praying to have a bigger kingdom than his grandfather, or his father actually. And at the end, when Vishnu came to give him that boon, he just felt, but what am I asking? I am asking for broken piece of glass. You are now there. I have no other desire than to serve you now. So that's also an example of a devotee who approached the Lord with a material desire, but just he's being purified by the Lord, so that actually he don't care anymore of his material desire. He just want to become a devotee. I would like to share with you something that happened during the festival in Nishinkakshetra, the Sankirtan festival. We met a yagya the last day, and we asked Lord Nishingadev to protect some devotees who are in some difficulties in their spiritual life or in their physical life, if we can say like this. And often we can see those yagya that are performed, we often ask something from the Lord. It's usually not like unmotivated. We ask something from the Lord. So during the yagya, I had quite a mystical experience. First, I was praying for different persons while we were chanting, and especially when we were chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Svaha, Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Svaha, and you feel like the mind is like entering into deep absorption. And I was at that time praying for some persons, and I almost felt like I would start to cry. I felt it was really moving inside my heart. And then I started to look at Lord Nishingadev, the deity of Lord Nishingadev, that was just after the fire. And suddenly it was like the glances between the Lord and me were like fixed. And I just could not move my glance anywhere else. And I was looking at the Lord and chanting. And then I heard a voice in my heart. And I felt it was like Lord Nishingadev was speaking to me. And he was telling me, from your perspective, you see good, you see bad, you see sickness, you see good health, you see all those things, and you approach me for this type of demands. But real life is totally different. Eternal life is totally different than what you think. So it was quite an amazing experience. And when, after the festival, we went by car to Berlin, Satchinandana Swami asked us, what was your best moment of the festival? So I explained this, the other devotee explained them, and then Maharaj said, I'm amazed, Gaurahari, of what happened to you, because I had similar experience. I was also looking at Lord Nishingadev during the yagya, and I heard almost the same message. And he said, the message I heard from Lord Nishingadev was that I am beyond. I am beyond death and birth. The place where I am has nothing to do with the place in which you are. Why are you praying so hard about saving someone from death? So here we can see also, a yagya is taking place, the devotees are there, and they are demanding something from the Lord. And the Lord gave them a hint. The Lord manifest to the devotee and give them inspiration, or give them a certain type of understanding. And in that case was, there is not really a need to ask me those things. And Satchinandana Swami said, I'm so amazed that you had almost the same. And he said, when two devotees, or three or four, have the same type of revelation, then it means it was really it's confirmed, it was really the message of the Lord. So here I just wanted to quote that example to show that although the devotee may approach the Lord, even though they have desires that, of course, it's not material desire, it's almost Vaishnava Seva to pray for Vaishnavas. But the Lord come and show us, maybe your prayer is not the ideal one. Maybe you should pray for ultimate things. But at the same time, he's giving us the knowledge. He's giving us the knowledge. There is no death. Everything is beyond that level. So now I will go one step further in this step when the devotee is actually asking the Lord to make spiritual progress or to become purified. Sometimes one may think,
oh no 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 no, that's not good. We want anyavilasita sunya. Huh? We want to be devotee. We should not pray anything for us. But actually, it is good and it is recommended to pray to the Lord so that He will help us in our devotional life. It's actually to show to the Lord that we need His help, just to ask Him. And yesterday we heard Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying that if one wants to be free from those unwanted material desire in the heart, he needs to petition the Lord. He needs to every day, daily, pray to the Lord, please help me. Please remove those anatta from inside of my heart. So there are many, many processes that are given to us to become purified. The chanting of the holy name, taking a bath in the holy river. There are many processes that will help us to become purified. And one actually should take all of them very sincerely and pray to the Lord for those anatta to be removed. So that's interesting. We have like two poles. In one way, it is recommended to go to the Lord and to ask the Lord for help in one's devotional life. And sometimes it's not necessary to ask anything. The Lord knows what is in the heart of His devotee. And there was an example with the sage of the Dantavakra forest. You remember in the time of Lord Ramachandra, there were many sages doing austerities in the forest. And then they saw Ramachandra. And when they saw Lord Ramachandra, they just felt some conjugal attraction to him. They felt this type of desire, and they felt ashamed. They did not dare to say anything to Lord Ramachandra. But although they did not pronounce one word, Lord Ramachandra knew what was in their heart. And in their next life, they took take birth as gopis in Vrindavan and have direct association with Krishna, to even go and dance with Krishna. So here we have an example of, even if one do not ask the Lord is aware of what we need, and He will, or what are our desires, and He will fulfill them. But that's a very special case. In the major time, we should not be ashamed or shy to ask the Lord for help. We were in Govindakund this year during Kartik with Sachinandana Swami, and one day a group of Russian devotees came with Danudar Maharaj to visit Maharaj, and Maharaj gave a little talk, a little inspiration. And Sachinandana Swami was saying, you have to speak to God. You have to speak to Krishna. Who of you is speaking to Krishna? You have to tell Him, how is your life going? What do you need? How is everything going? Like you would do with a friend. And then he was saying, when you learn to talk to God, your relationship to God will become much more personal. And it's amazing, I started to do that with the deities I'm worshipping. In the evening, when I undress them to put them to the bed, I am speaking to them and I tell them of the failure I had during the day, how good I was to serve them, or where did I was not so good. Like this, I just speak to them, and I feel so much reciprocation from the deity. The deity seems to say, oh, you really acknowledge I'm here? You are not thinking I'm just a doll. You speak to me. That means you really believe I'm there as a person. And it's really amazing. And Sachinandana Swami was saying to the devotees, please, we were in Govindakund. When you go back to Vrindavan, all of you go to Radha Shyama Sundar. And all of you, either loudly or either in your mind, you just go to the deities and you pray and you speak to them and you ask them for help. You ask them for guidance. You tell them where you are and what you need in your spiritual life. So that's something actually that is very, very recommended. That's not yet the highest, the unmotivated, but that's helped so much to have a personal
relationship with Krishna, to just address him like he is a person. Once I was in Zagreb and Chandramouli Maharaj came there. So we made a kirtan to welcome him, and he went to the temple room and sat on the Vyasasan, and he spoke a little bit about why are we suffering in this world? What is the main reason of our sufferings? And then he said, our expectations. All our expectations, how do we say expectation? Erwartungen. All our expectations are making us suffer. Because we expect so much, we are suffering. And then he asked, do you have any question like this? And I ask a question, I say, Maharaj, is that all right to expect to make progress? Is that all right? And he say, yeah, it's all right, but it's the beginning stage. When you become more advanced, you just want to serve. You don't care for your progress anymore. You just want to serve. That's the only things that matter. So this actually brings us to the third level, to the pure bhakti, to the level when the devotee actually just want to please the Lord and do not care for anything in exchange. This is something very rare. This is something very precious. This is this attitude of giving to Krishna without expecting anything in exchange. It's bringing the devotee immediately in bliss. When one is in that frame of mind, one immediately experiences Krishna consciousness in a very deep way. It's enlivening. Krishna is so moved when we approach him without asking him anything that immediately there is such a reciprocation. Srila Prabhupada was saying in the purport that the devotee actually do not ask something for the Lord, but the devotee just want to surrender. And the devotee surrender knowing my Lord will take good care of me. I have faith. I just can surrender. Hare Krishna. So this selflessness in service is actually very much connected to being unattached to the fruit of our result. This desire to enjoy the fruit of our activities is what cut us off from being selfless. Because we want to enjoy the fruit, we are selfish. So I just would like to speak a little from the Bhagavad Gita point of view, or just mention two nice verses I was reading some days ago about being detached from the fruit of our action. I started again to read Bhagavad Gita, and my God, it's so good. I did not read for a long time, but it's such a rasayana, I mean such a strong medicine to read the Bhagavad Gita. So in the Bhagavad Gita, I just want to do a little reading, so please don't switch off your mind when I read. Try to keep there. You have, Krishna is telling to Arjuna, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruit of the action. Never consider yourself the cause of the result of your activities. Never consider you are the cause of the result of your activities. And never be attached to not doing your duty. So here Krishna said, I am the person who will reward any type of fruit. You should not try to, you are not entitled to take those fruits. And then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that Krishna is saying, gain or victory is only my concern. Whatever happened is only my concern. You don't care for that. You don't need to care for the result. That I take That's my part of the job. You just do the action, but you are not attached of what happened. Gain or victory are my concern. And one verse later, Krishna said, oh, you said something. Yeah, here. Please fasten your seatbelt. That's very, very amazing what Krishna is saying. In the two verses later, the 49th of the second chapter. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant for devotional service, far distant by devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruit of their work are misers. I found very, very interesting that Krishna is saying that those who try to enjoy the fruit of their action are like miser, like they just want for themselves. And in the purport also, Prabhupada said that all those who want actually to enjoy the fruit of their action, they are further entangled in material life. So Krishna is saying that all material activities are abominable. Why? Because they bound the person who performs those material activities to the cycle of birth and death. They bound the person who acts into the material life. So only actually with that consciousness of letting the fruit of our action to Krishna, knowing that's his concern, that's not my concern, can the devotee actually go beyond, can go in that place of selflessness, can go in that place where he's not at all bound anymore into this material world. This bhakti, this consciousness, this selflessness in service to Krishna is such a rare state of consciousness and such a beautiful state of consciousness. Although one may think that's only for those who are liberated, or that's only for those who are very advanced, who are beyond anatta nivritti, who are beyond all those material contamination, but still it's reachable to everyone. Not that everyone can do that in a long period of time, but anyone can pray for that. Anyone can tune himself while doing the action. Okay, my Lord, I leave it to you. Although one do not have the adhika, one can help by thinking of that and praying for that to reach that state. It is just for you. Imagine, you just keep that in mind when you are doing service. This is just for you, Krishna. This is just for you. I don't want anything back. It's possible, isn't it, to think like this or to pray like this. I had, when I was young, I had a cassette of a sitar player. And on the cover, it was written, just for you. And I was looking, just for me. How can it be like this? I was just amazed of this attitude, just for you. And that's what devotion means, what service means. If we want to render devotional service, that means we want to offer without asking anything in exchange. As long as we want something back, it's not really devotional service. Devotional service is like you want to please. It's almost like you want to offer a gift to someone. Huh? Are you going to someone offering a gift, and after offering the gift, you say, oh, by the way, could you also give me this or give me that? Huh? You don't feel like doing like this. If you offer a gift, it's for you, and I don't ask something in exchange. So I think this, we should be thinking of those aspects of how can we offer this service to Krishna, which is unmotivated, where we actually don't offer something, but please, you arrange a parking place for me when I arrive in the temple, or whatever childish wish one may sometimes ask to the Lord. So for that, we need to check our motivation. What
is in our mind when we do the service. What are we thinking of when we are performing service? And then when we have a little bit this introspection of our thoughts, of our intention, then one can direct them into this selfless path, into just for you, Krishna. I don't want anything in exchange. In the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna said, Yat karoshi yadashnasi yachuoshi tadashi yat yat tapasyasi kanteya tat kurushva madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you give in charity, whatever austerity you perform, just give it to me. Huh? That's just for me. Everything is meant for me. Just don't be a miser. Don't keep those for you. Just give them to me. I had once a little example of that. I hope it's not foolish, but it, for me actually it meant something, so I will tell you. We had a japa retreat in Switzerland, in the Alps, very high in the mountains, small chalet, they call that, it's like a wooden house. It was even called Harry's chalet. Anyway, we were there and we had the day of 64 rounds. So on that day, I went to chant in the nature, and I was thinking, I will not come back for the lunch. I'm now having good rounds. I just keep on chanting. But then I realized, actually, every day I had the service to put some bhajan while the devotees were taking prasad. And I was there, oh, actually, that's my service. And especially on this 64 rounds day, we were doing monam. Nobody would speak, so it was actually good for them to listen some bhajan. So I was there, yeah, anyone can put the bhajan in my place. What should I do? I'm chanting so nicely now. I better keep on chanting. And then I said, no, this is my service. I go and do that. So I went back to the chalet. And as I was walking, suddenly I started to feel Krishna's presence like something, some special mercy was given to me. I cannot really describe how it was, but there was really a special mercy in the air, and I was feeling Krishna is happy that I'm not just thinking of my own happiness in japa, but I was keeping on my service for the other Vaishnavas. And then we went down, we took prasad, I put the music, and the music was from B.B. Govinda Goswami. And in the middle of the music, suddenly there was a flute solo. And I was eating, and suddenly the flute solo came. And suddenly I felt like something strange on the heart. And suddenly the thought came in my mind, when will I hear Krishna's flute? I hear this flute now, but when will I hear Krishna playing flute? And I could feel this, that was really like imbibed with a mood of separation. And I felt it's just mercy that is flowing on me right now. And I could feel I was selfless. I did not want even to enjoy Krishna consciousness. I thought, let me do my service first. And Krishna was pleased because of that and just gave me this special mercy. This year also, we were in Govardhan during Kartik with Sachinandana's family and few devotees, and then Govardhan Puja came. So we had a beautiful festival in the ashram. We made something very small just for those who were living in this ashram. And after the feast, Maharaj said, Gaurahari, let's go. We do a Govardhan Parikram. So we went, we did Govardhan Parikram. And there was a lot of people, Govardhan Puja, it was really crowded like anything. And in the middle of the parikram, I asked Maharaj, what is your meditation? What are you thinking of? And Maharaj said, well, today is Govardhan Puja. Today, Krishna himself took the form of Govardhan and came to accept those offering. And then he said, I am he. Krishna said, I am Govardhan. So now, what happened? All the Brajbasis are doing parikram of Govardhan with that understanding, he is Krishna.
So what I'm doing, my meditation, is that I just follow the Prajapatis. I'm one of them. I'm also with them thinking, Govardhan is Krishna, he has manifest, I do a parikram out of respect for him. So the next morning, we've ended the parikram, and the next morning Maharaj called me. And he said something very nice. He said, see, yesterday when we were doing the parikram, I was really in two minds. In one side, I was thinking, anyway, I'm not a man of the crowd. I don't like to be with so many people to perform my devotional life. And they are loud, and they are unsensitive, many of them, and I really don't like that. But I did it for Krishna. And then he looked in my eyes, and he said, this is the secret, Korahari. This is the secret of spiritual life. When you leave aside your own interest, when you leave aside what is best for you, how can I have the best situation, the best position, the best place in this world? When you leave all that aside and you just focus in how can I give pleasure for Krishna? What is pleasing to Krishna? What is pleasing to Guru? When you keep that in mind, then you are really practicing spiritual life. Otherwise, your spiritual life is just a pretense. It's just a show. It's not the real stuff. There is another instance in Krishna Lila where we hear about this selflessness of the friends of Krishna or the Brajbasis. And especially when Krishna went to Mathura, all the Brajbasis were so much in separation from Krishna that when Nanda Maharaj came with the chariot, everyone was just looking at Mathura, and they were looking at the chariot and feeling, oh, we'll get our life back. Krishna is coming back. But Nanda Maharaj was alone, and they were all in such a deep feeling of separation. They would fast, they would not eat, they would not be able to do anything. And 3 days later, they went to Nanda Maharaj, and they said something very nice. They said to Nanda Maharaj, okay, Krishna decided to stay in Mathura. We accept it. We accept it because we want to accept whatever will please Krishna. Whatever will please Krishna, we will accept it. We will not rebel against that. Although we are almost dying of pain, but we accept what he wants, what he likes, and we will do according to that. So that's also a very beautiful example how, although there was so much suffering, how they will leave Krishna, see what will please Krishna most. So until when should we do the lecture? Are you in a hurry to go home? I would like to maybe just give you a little. In that mood of selflessness, I would like to connect it a little bit with our japa. Because japa is a service that we are doing where we have time to meditate or to contemplate how we are doing our service to Krishna. And I think it's very, very nice when we are doing japa that we come into that mood of, I'm chanting just for you. The chanting that I'm doing now, it's my service for you. It's not always easy to understand how chanting of japa is really a service. Often we relay service with physical activities, but chanting is actually a service where one offers a lot to Krishna. One offers his time, one offers his voice, one offers his energy, and one tries to offer his attention to the Lord. So it's actually a big package that we are offering. That's a big offering to Krishna when we are chanting japa. And I have heard that some devotees, to make that chanting more understandable, that it is a service, some devotees are meditating that the names they are chanting, they are like flowers. And while they are chanting, they are offering those names like flowers to Krishna, so that they connect the chanting of the holy name as an offering to Krishna, and the names are actually like flowers. I would like to share another very nice experience I had this year in India. While chanting one morning, I was thinking a lot about how I could improve my japa and was giving a lot. And we were in the Govardhan retreat, and we had a hall for the retreat. We had an altar, and many devotees had their personal deities. So in the morning they would give abhishek, they would dress their deities, and we could chant, and we could actually look, and we could see bhakti. Sometimes we think bhakti we cannot see, it's a mental attitude, but it is. But just by seeing how they were dealing with the deities, how careful they were in dressing, in putting the shila down, you could see how they were caring, how they will see the deity as Krishna himself. And I was chanting and looking at that, and then I realized actually the name is also a deity. And the way I'm chanting the holy name is also, I should also deal with the holy name with the same care they have in dealing with the shilas. I should actually pronounce all the name with love and affection, with good articulation, with really being with the name. And in that consciousness, it was like entering deeper into such a beautiful japa session. And I think whenever our japa is not enlivened, whenever we are maybe struggling or it is dry, if we can't connect that the name is Krishna himself, is a person, and to address Krishna, to enter into that mood that Krishna is non-different than the name, to contemplate that, then the japa becomes very enlivened. And this just for you, this is my offering to you, this is very, very helpful into the practice of our japa. So I would like to end this lecture by taking you to Vrindavan, to Brajbhumi, and to hear a little bit about another instance when the Brajbasis, and especially the gopis, were showing their selflessness to Krishna. And that's in the pastimes of Krishna, who came to steal the gopi's clothes, to steal the clothes of the gopi. It was the first month of winter when there was this worship of goddess Katyayani. And all the unmarried gopis started to do a special fast. They were eating only khichdi without spices. They were focusing to do this worship of goddess Katyayani. So very early in the morning, they will meet. It will be dark already. It was cold. They will call each other by their names. They will take the hands of each other and go to the river Yamuna. There they will make a small murti of goddess Katyayani, and they will worship that deity, asking for her husband. But not any one husband. They were actually praying for Krishna to be their husband. They will pray to Katyayani, "Oh great yogini," they will address Katyayani, "my connection with Krishna should be immediately arranged by you, without the unnecessary disturbance of my parents. I am too anxious and cannot wait." So that was the prayers of the gopis to Katyayani. And they knew, Katyayani, you are Durga Devi, you are material energy, you are very good to illusioned people. So please put your illusion on our parents so that we can marry Krishna. They knew that Krishna did not have Brahmanical initiation. They knew that they could not actually marry Krishna. But they were praying, please organize a Gandharva marriage. That's a marriage that can be done without the sanction of the parents. So that was the prayer of the gopis. There is also a very interesting details that is given by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, is saying that Durga, the name Durga, do not only address material energy. But he's saying this is especially in Pancharatra it is stated that the name Durga is sometimes used to refer to the internal superior energy. This is especially the case as the presiding deity of all mantra worshipping Krishna. Now listen at that. Those who think that the name Durga refers exclusively to the external potency of the Lord have no chance of getting even a touch of the breeze carrying the scent of prema on their body. So it's very, very interesting and very strong point that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is making us, is warning us to not think that Durga is only material energy, but can also refer to the internal energy. Anyways, the gopis were doing this worship every morning. They will use simple article, but also opulent article, incense, flower, and they will do their worship. They did that for 1 month, and on the Purnima of the last day, they went there to end their puja. At that time, Krishna came on this last day. He came with some small friends. It is said that in some shastra that those friends were very young and could not even speak properly. But they were so attracted to Krishna that they just followed him. So Krishna came there and saw that the gopi were taking their bath in the Yamuna. So Krishna took the clothes of the gopi and went up into a tree. And then he started loudly to laugh, just to attract the attention of the gopis. And the small boy were also loudly laughing. So the gopis saw and said, "Krishna, what are you doing on that tree?" And Krishna said, "Well, I was with my cows in the pasturing ground, and I saw this tree which seems to have very interesting type of flowers and colorful leaves. So I just came and went up to see, but it's not flower, they are garments." The gopi said, come on, we know you steal the clothes, please give those clothes back." And Krishna said, no, I did not do that." Krishna is saying, and how can you say that's your clothes?" So the gopi said, but look closely, you will see that's woman's clothes, that can be only ours." And Krishna said, "You think you are the only woman in the universe? It can be other, it can be demigods' clothes." And like this, they would argue for a while. The gopis will say, "Now, please give us our clothes. You have to be fast because your cows are going away. You cannot leave the cows like this. Please give our clothes and come down your tree." And Krishna was saying, "Oh, I have my time, but you have your household duty to do. So you are in trouble if you don't come immediately." So like this, they would all the time argue and play. But the gopis felt very happy. They were feeling Krishna is taking care of us. Krishna is giving us attention. Krishna is joking with us. Krishna is actually treating us as if we are his husband. His wife's, sorry. So, there are many, many details, but I don't want to make life too hard for some of you. 3-4 Minuten und dann wir sind fertig. Das ist nicht einfach, wenn du kannst nicht verstanden viel. Aber nur ein bisschen und dann. So, the gopis were in the water, but they started to shiver. It was becoming colder and colder. And then they will also laugh between each other. They will say, "Okay, you go first to get your clothes." Because Krishna was just insisting, "You have to come out of the water and pick up the clothes from me. So the gopis were laughing together. You go first. And the other said, yeah, we want to see if he play a trick on you, or how is it doing. But after a certain time, they did not laugh so much, because the cold was coming, and they were fearing that some other men will come, and how will everything end. So they were really thinking what to do now. And then the gopi thought, I think if we want to please Krishna, we have to let aside our self-interest. And this is the point where I wanted to bring you. This point when the devotee think, if I want to please Krishna, I have to actually leave aside my own self-interest. So much nectar in Krishna consciousness. So I will stop here. I feel the signal that it's time to end. What to do? So I thank you for being here and keeping on listening. And yeah, maybe you have any question or any comment, Chaitanya.
Yes, Hare Krishna. Can I ask? I want to know, because you explained very nice the point of selflessness. Yeah, and described it very nicely from your own experience. And I'm thinking now, we are practicing this, and we have seen in the past very much selflessness, but also connected with self-nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a material body and we have material needs. So what is the measurement?
Yeah.
How much can we be selfless without harming us?
Mm-hmm.
What should be? Is there a limit or is there no limit, or is everything up to Krishna? Because we see devotees, they gave their whole life, and now they're struggling and have diseases because of their selflessness.
Mm.
So I'm asking that how we should, and it should come from our own inspiration.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you already gave a part of the answer. It should mostly come from one's own. It's welcome. That this type of selflessness should be something that's from our own heart, that it's not actually imposed on us. And often I see there is this problem that the devotees want to be in a higher level in which they are not. So they are thinking, I surrender. But then they neglect some of the aspect of their life, some of their material needs that they need also to take care. And after sometimes that they break down and they feel, oh, Krishna did not care of me. But that's I think sometimes a little bit irresponsible surrender. I think one has to always keep in mind in which stage he is and not try to be in a Paramahamsa level. And I remember when I was traveling with Satchinandana Maharaj in the beginning of my spiritual life, I will never eat before he eats. Why? Because it's written in Shastra. One should never eat before the Guru. So I will always do that. And one day, Maharaj did not eat the whole day. And we were traveling, I had to drive the whole day, and I was really super hungry. And after some time, Maharaj looked at me and said, so Gaurahari, did you take prasad today? And I say, no. He said, why? And I say, oh, I'm not supposed to eat before the Guru. And he said, Gaurahari, you are foolish. You are really stupid. You don't think. You think you can be at the same level that I am? You think you can neglect your basic need like I do for devotional service? You think you are on that level? You are just stupid. You are hungry, you should eat. And then you can do your service properly. Service is the main consideration. So that's a small example that shows that sometimes devotees, we hear from Shastra what is the ideal, but sometimes we have to understand what is behind those advices. What we should understand what is the root behind. And all those type of surrender, they need to be done actually very carefully. This type of selflessness is very good, but it should never push us into a border when we are in a struggle. Of course, sometimes we need a little bit to be on the hot chair, or to be a little bit challenged, so that our feelings for Krishna come in a better way. But it should never be something in long term. One should never be under pressure for long term in the aim of surrender. That's something that should be gradual. And I think we should be very much careful to know to be aware which stage we are of our devotional life, and not try to be in a higher stage and act like a pure devotee if we are not. I think we should learn to acknowledge where we are, and to learn to acknowledge our mistakes, and to not make a show of being the super devotee. I think that's very much connected to that, to be this intelligent step of surrender, but to not just make a big show and fall after sometimes. It has to be gradual, so that we can do it for a long time. If we just do it super strong, and then we will stop, because it's beyond our adhikar, it's beyond our ability, so we will be pushed by Krishna to directly stop that. So we have actually all those steps we are doing in spiritual life towards surrender, we have to do them very, very gradual. So, Krishna Chaitanya, that was my humble attempt to answer. I hope it was okay. Okay. Anything else? Or should we stop? Any comment, maybe? Okay, so thank you for your kind attention. Yeah? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Take the microphone, because he's in the kitchen. He will not... Oof. Haribol, I hope it works still. Yeah.
Just a little bit, if you don't mind. So the addition to this is, when we come to Krishna consciousness first time, when we are young devotee, very very young devotee, it is necessary for somebody else, like we join the army, it is necessary for somebody. We go through the boot camp, the first year. Of training by somebody else, because we don't know what is to be done, what is not to be done. So it is necessary very much to have somebody to actually push us, because we don't know our limits. We've never been to spiritual life in this life, so we don't know what we can do and what we cannot do. And that proved very good. And later on, in later years of Krishna consciousness, it also depends on one personal mode. The person realized, you know, some people in mode of goodness, some people in mode of passion, some people in mode of ignorance. This is predominant modes, of course, they're all mixed. And according to our mode, we have to recognize, first of all, through our introspection, what is our mode, and act according to that mode, to find our, this technical called Svadharma, our original position in our service to Krishna. And while finding our Svadharma, we can actually go forward according to our mode, because we recognize this is my mode. And the big problems arising with the Buddhists is they cannot recognize their Svadharma, so they act in others' Svadharma. And in Bhagavad Gita said that it is better to act when you're in your own, what is the verse? Feeling properly than to do others' duties. So we have to recognize our own Siddharma and our own duty. And on top of it, we always have to consult with our higher authorities. So we'll have that balance. And even that, it is always advised to because is always advised to actually do a little more than we could, because we always could do a little more than we could. Because there's always tendency, this is a cheating propensity in human nature to be cheating. So we always think, I'll take a little step back, because when we're supposed to be in line, we always go a little step back. So it always has to be to recognize our position, and also Dharma, and to always consult with the authorities. And then we'll find some balance. Not everybody can find it, but yeah.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Maybe someone can also translate that answer. I'm sorry, I always forget you. Dayananda. Maybe someone can translate. I think it's.
You don't understand?
No. It will be nice, maybe. That's a relevant answer also. Okay, so Garantara, Srimad Bhagavatam, ki jai, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Thank you so much.
Sorry.
No, it's very, very good. Thank you. It make it clearer. Yeah. Very nice. Who is?